That's Miles Davis with Walkin'. And of course, he's on trumpet, J.J. Jones on trombone, Lucky Thompson, tenor sax, Horace Silva, piano, Percy Heath on bass, and the good old Kenny Clark on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. It is Friday, August the 16th. And I'll talk about the Brawley case, a very significant development announced by Alton Maddox on our program yesterday. It wasn't planned initially that way. It was planned simply to be part two of the discussion that we had started the day before. But in fact, this particular development came almost fortuitously in our second segment on the subject, in the second day. But I want to talk about this NSA, the newest revelation, and, you know, it's yet another story about the NSA, the National Security Agency, the intelligence gatherer, and the Washington Post has said in its newest revelation, based on the documents purloined by Edward Snowden, showing flagrant violations of the National Security Agency, flagrant violations not only of citizens' rights, but also of constitutional protections that are supposed to secure those rights. According to the story in the Post today, the NSA overstepped its legal authority thousands of times in the past 2 years, and it not only involved the unauthorized electronic surveillance of U.S. citizens, but it also talked about the fact that the systems that were supposed to be the protections against these unauthorized electronic surveillance incidents themselves did not kick in. They failed to kick in. According to an internal audit, the report says, dated May 12, 2012, there were 2,776 incidents of unauthorized data collection over the previous 12 months. And the rate of violations grew significantly each quarter from 546 in the second quarter of 2011 to 865 in the first quarter of 2012. It's not known how many individuals were subjected to surveillance or how many of those people subjected to surveillance were subjected legally to authorized surveillance. So this essentially is the report of the Washington Post expanding the breaches of privacy by the intelligence gathering agency, the NSA. And it, of course, highlights the fact that these things were occurring despite the public claims by the agency itself and the president that there were sufficient protections in place against these very things happening, that the government was conscientiously obeying these limitations, obeying procedures, established procedures, that Congress was involved, the president was not doing something on his own, nor was the NSA doing anything on its own, but it was in effect a process involving all parties, including this secret court that granted warrants whenever the government needed to pry in a manner that would arguably be said to be contrary to constitutional protections. So in this sense, the article was an eye-opener, but in another sense, it was basically a new riff on a well-established theme. This had, after all, been the basis of the leaks by Edward Snowden and others for some time, the behavior of, or misbehavior of, a government that lifts itself above the people, a government that takes summary actions, a government that lies, and a government that has the intention, despite its public pronouncements, the intention to violate people's rights in the name of national security. This is what, I guess, in the old Plato's Republic would be called the noble lie. And governments will lie from time to time, not, you know, because governments really just don't lie just like that, but in the event that they have to lie, it is incumbent upon the people to understand and appreciate that they are lying for our own good. They have to tell us lies from time to time in the interest of a larger beneficial objective. You know, it's pretty much like being invited to dinner and the host really can't cook, but you do your best to swallow whatever morsels are on your plate, and you just glow about the food, how wonderful it is, and can I please have the recipe? It's fantastic. That is called the noble lie. You lie in the interest of the greater good. Well, I get that, and of course, this is the latest manifestation of Edward Snowden's remote power. And frankly, it's a form of waterboarding, really, when you think about it. Look, if you have information, why not just get it over with? Just do what Daniel Ellsberg did, put it all in a book, get it all done. But of course, we're going by the drip-by-drip method. And I don't know if anybody has paid attention to it, but it is exactly the same methodology that is being criticized. You tell people what they want to know when you think it is the opportune time to let them know, and then you hold on to something else. Is, you know, this is a kind of thing, I call it waterboarding, really. It's like torturing people. Oh, and there's so much more to come, and we are supposed to be there, you know, just clenching our fingers and our fists, and, you know, what else? What other ugly things are likely to come down the pike? Oh, my God, they have other stuff. I want to address this, and I know it would irk some people, because progressives are not supposed to think this way. Well, you know what I think about political labels, so so I exempt myself from the thing, because I'm not attaching a political label to myself other than calling it as I see it. It is an immense amount of power that an individual has when they understand that in this time that we exist in, information is power. And sometimes information is even greater than power. That's how exquisite it is to be in possession of information, certain kinds of information. And the behavior of Edward Snowden is not unlike that of a, you know, somebody taking somebody hostage. if you don't give me what I want, I'll kill off this other person over here. Or I'll shoot that other person over there. And the blood will be on your hands. I have the power to call the shots. Now, mind you, we appreciate the fact that the reports do give us a window to look into the government's behavior and conduct, which clearly is not only troublesome, but it's terrifying. But again, I go back to the flip side, and I look at this thing through, I hate to use the pun, but through a different, dare I say the word, prism? Yes. I look at this through an entirely different prism. And the prism through which I see this is one that has a historical context. And the historical context is, what's new? What's new about the government lying and spying? I understand for many people who have come to appreciate this as a problem for the first time, this looks like a brand new problem of extraordinary evil. But if you talk to a bunch of folks, you know, if you had a wide-ranging life, and unless you were raised under a rock or were in a coma for most of your years on this planet, in this country, you can't tell me that only now has it occurred to anybody that the government does evil, wrong things. And spying is number one. And isn't it ironic that the person who's telling us about spying is himself a spy? He spied. And now we are put like puppets. Do we believe that spy? Or do we believe that other spy? Do we like that spy and then hate that other spy? Do we love the Snowden spy and hate the government spy? Do we find the Snowden spy more credible than the government spy? But in our psychological machinations that we perform on ourselves, we have converted a spy into something else. He's a whistleblower. He's a patriot. He's a stand-up guy. Look at his conduct, and it will tell you something else. A compliant press all over the world, whether it was The Guardian or The Washington Post, was selected not for their bravery to print things, but for their malleability, their predictable malleability. They can be molded like putty. And truthfully, this is a very meaty story. People are getting a look at the innards of the government, digging deep into the belly of this beast, and seeing it up close and personal in a way they haven't seen it in a long, long time. This is heady stuff. But the conduct of the person controlling all of the information is as odious as the agency he seeks to condemn. Why do I say that? I'll answer it this way, with a story, with a lead story. I used to run a journalism training program where, at no charge to participants, we cram about 4 or 5 years of college-level work into 20 weeks. And there was a particularly bright young man who happened to be white, who was in the program. And at that time, we were leading into founding a paper called The City Sun. I was working on it and, you know, toying with different layouts and so forth. It happened that I went to Pratt Institute and took a course in newspaper design. Okay. A small thing. Now, I have taught everybody what they know. This particular person I'm referring to went on to be a news executive who would not mention my humble little program because we only had a one-room school and we only had manual Royal typewriters. But as I told folks, if you type crap on a manual typewriter, you'll only type it faster with a computer. But any event, there was a thing called a proportion wheel. And a proportion wheel is actually a wheel on top of another wheel, both of them with gradations of measurements. And if you wanted to either enlarge an image or reduce an image, you line up the image of the smaller one on the smaller wheel and the image you wanted to be, the size you wanted to be on the bigger wheel, and there was a little slit in the middle that would tell you by what percentage you have to either reduce it or enlarge it. Simple, it's very simple, a very simple thing. But I actually started using my calculator. I used a calculator to do that pretty quickly. But I was fascinated by this proportion wheel. It looked so cute. So I said, hey, how does that work? And he wouldn't say. For as long as I asked, how does that work? Could you show me how that works? He wouldn't say. He never did say. He never did, quote, teach me, unquote, what he knew. And, of course, I got that right away, so I would persistently ask him, could you show me how that works? To see whether it would actually kick in that I'm on to him. And this is where we are. The people who control information in a huge way understand the power that they have. And even a person like Edward Snowden that everybody's running around praising as this the patron saint of transparency is behaving no different than the government. He'll let you know only what he wants you to know, when he wants you to know it, and through which medium he desires you to know it. He's in full control. That is not the behavior of a reformist. It's the behavior of a tactician. And tacticians always have a game plan. And usually the game plan, first and foremost, is centered on the self. So, this newest manifestation of this peculiar understanding of knowledge power is so ironic. I don't know how people are missing the symbolism of it all. They're on the attack. Because bottom line, these new stories, quote unquote, they're not really new. We got the gist of it the first time. And the second time, and the third time, and now the fourth. We got it. The NSA is a nasty, evil agency that ought to be disbanded. We get that. Okay, great. But we got that earlier than you thought. Unless people weren't paying attention. When people were telling them, we got that. They weren't listening because it wasn't a problem then. The people who were educating America about this problem were not people. Not real people. And they did not have the wherewithal of controlling the means of information, the flow of information, you know, the machines of information. When we said Malcolm X was assassinated, when we said Martin Luther King was assassinated, implicating the system, the government. People said, oh, there they go again. How many more could we name of people who've been martyred? And, you know, they bowed their heads for the requisite 30 seconds and moved on, sang Kumbaya, two verses, and then we all moved on. But it was not a problem. And certainly, it was not a manifestation of the evil government then. It was just black folks being ornery. The ambassadors of our message were vilified and killed. The ambassadors of this message is revered and sanctified. And now it becomes a real issue. That's a problem for progressive America to deal with. Not mine. I already dealt with that. But here's the interesting thing. And still nobody's paying attention. The question isn't about the government and how badly it's behaving. The question is, how come we don't get a balanced report? The balanced report would tell us that the illegal, odious, unconstitutional conduct of the government is exactly the same as the conduct of these new oligarchs in the high-tech field, all of them. And if Edward Snowden were to have any credibility, his criticisms of government will be accompanied by deep criticism of his own industry, which created something brand new, a gift that keeps on taking, called the Industrial Intelligence Complex. Uh-huh. Intrigued, aren't we? Where is the scrutiny of that? And the truth is that all of the people that he's defending, the central issue here is they're defending the new oligarchs. These young, powerful, multi-zillion billionaires who behave exactly the same way as the government, who are as guilty as the government in routinely violating rights and have been doing so for a long, long, long time. But because Snowden and others are doing it, it's okay. They are the rightful inheritors of power. So you need not question them. They are the enlightened ones. I suggest to you, when you have some spare time, you look up all of these major companies that are internet-based, all of them, including the government. I'm not exempting the government. But I'm saying to you, I'm not being manipulated into thinking, well, it's the government that's invading our privacy. No! The government is late into this thing. Late. The government had previously more primitive methods of gathering its information and controlling populations. They're now getting really good at the technological aspect of it, because after all, they created it. Bill Gates did not invent the internet. Zuckerberg did not invent the internet. The government invented the internet. And these guys, if you care to look up the unending list of violations and fines and judgments against these organizations for routinely violating people's rights, the NSA looks tame compared to them. And here's part two of that. These are the companies that partnered with the government to create the intelligence complex. The industrial intelligence complex is, the fact that NSA actually exists and is doing what it's doing now was the work, the handiwork, and the wholesale cooperation of the people who now run the world, the technological world. But do you notice they're absent from criticism? Which is to say, we are being manipulated to see only one side of the coin. Jeff Bezos, Mr. Amazon.com, is about to acquire a newspaper, the Washington Post, for $250 million. By any definition, it's a lot of money. He's paying cash. And the $250 million he will pay cash is less than 1% of his personal cash wealth. Now, I'm not talking about the other wealth. Just his cash, his liquid assets. $250 million is less than 1% of what he's worth. Do we see Mr. Assange attacking these people? Are they providing jobs for America? No. Are they developing a lot of things that you could point to and say, well, they're developing housing? No. Are they paying taxes? Oh, no, 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 no. Not at all. They are as ruthless, as heartless, as any other capitalist magnate that you could ever find in the history of American capitalism. But they're young, and they have their handles on the new commodity, which is information. And they are exercising it in very interesting ways. Isn't it interesting that they all seem to have offices, lobbying offices in Washington, D.C.? And we know why. Because they are as crooked as the politicians that people criticize. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars because they want what the government has, which is authority over the internet, regulation of the internet. And that's where their bread and butter is. Are. Okay, I'm a grammarian. I should know that subjects and verbs should always agree. So we find this one-sided argument. We've been exposed to a one-sided argument all along since these great revelations have been published, and the whole country and the world is now obsessed with transparency. Not theirs, not their transparency, not their industry's transparency, but the government's transparency, and only the government. Only the government is doing bad things. As if these guys are somehow very different. And that's the hypocrisy of it. And that's why I'm not paying Ed Snowden any mind. He's acting exactly like the people he's castigating, because they're so pure, you know. They're so above it all, and they are untouched. They're not at all involved in that murky underworld of politics. They're swimming in swill. It's up to their eyeballs. They are just lusting for more and more. These are the super, super, super capitalists of the world. And you will never hear a peep out of Snowden, nor would they call their own industry to account for why their industry in the first place cooperated in the creation of the industrial intelligence complex, enhancing the government's ability to oppress, enhancing the government's ability to invade people's privacy, because they do so too. Just 2 days ago, Google admitted that we kind of snooped a lot. We scooped up a lot of things, but it's, you know, just like the government said, it was unwittingly done. Google actually said in a 39-page motion that in a case that was filed all the way back in 1979, arguing that users of its medium should have no expectation of privacy. They were most recently shown to have collected all kinds of goodies, hundreds and hundreds of thousands and millions of goodies, just like at NSA, exactly the same thing. With this mapping that they're doing, millions of pieces of information into its grasp. They're mapping every street, including your own address. That's not your private property. They had Wi-Fi connections. It's everything as these cars go down, mapping the topography of the entire world. They're collecting all of this intelligence so as to be in the preferred position to offer the government these services, of course, for a tiny little fee. They actually admitted it. And they said, we didn't intend to do it, but yes, we did do it. You look up at Microsoft and see all the actions all over the world. In Europe, Microsoft is being hammered for invading people's privacy. But you're not going to hear that from Mr. Assange or Mr. WikiLeaks or from the industry itself. Zuckerberg recently said, Facebook doesn't interfere with anybody's privacy, but Google does, and Microsoft does, but not me. We are not into that at all. What did he say? I'm reading you a quote from Zuckerberg. If you look at companies, whether it's Google or Yahoo or Microsoft, right, that have search engines and networks, they also have a huge amount of information about you. It's just that they're collecting that about you behind your back, really. And it's like you're going around on the web, and they have cookies, and they're collecting this huge amount of information about who you are. But you never know that. The people have little or no control over the information that a company like Google or Yahoo or Microsoft, but not his, has about you. I think these companies with those big ad networks are basically getting away with collecting huge amounts of information, likely way more information than people are sharing on Facebook about themselves. In reality, you have control over every single thing that you've shared on Facebook. Of course, he's not lying. He couldn't possibly be lying that Facebook is the only exemption. So, here's a user, just a small note I picked up. It's two paragraphs long. It says, "Stop Microsoft privacy violations." And the person who doesn't name himself, just as a service to others, says, if you run Windows Update on a regular basis, you may have noticed that your PC automatically downloaded and installed something called Windows Genuine Advantage. It is designed to help Microsoft root out unlicensed copies of Windows. Recently, Microsoft was forced to admit that Windows Genuine Advantage sends potentially identifying information from your computer over the internet to Microsoft. Fortunately, you can remove this quasi-spyware from your computer by following these instructions. Spying is industry-wide. And the NSA, despite what Snowden and others of his ilk say, the NSA does not have a monopoly on it. But nobody's paying attention to these guys, who should be made to account for their role in creating the industrial intelligence complex. We'll take this little break and come back, and I'll wax rhetoric a little bit more on the Tawana Brawley case. This is Lead Stories. I'm Patrice Lead on this Friday, August the 16th, trying to share with you something that you would have some time to ponder over the weekend, and certainly we'll have something to talk about when next we have open forum. If you missed yesterday, the second day of our discussion on the Tawana Brawley case, I suggest you download the podcast or listen to it from the archive. Attorney Alton Maddox shared with us exclusively that a Virginia court has dismissed a defamation claim that would have ordered Tawana Brawley to pay more than $400,000 from her wages to Stephen Pagonis, a former assistant attorney, district attorney, from Dutchess County, who, along with Harry Christ, a police officer, Scott Patterson, a state trooper, and Eugene Brinson, a public utility worker, were early targets of prosecution and investigation in the kidnapping and rape of Brawley over a four-day period in 1987. The Virginia court's dismissal of Pagonis's claim came 15 years after a pitted jury in Dutchess County Supreme Court in 1998, similarly had found that Pagonis could not claim he was defamed because he did not prove he was not associated with the crime and that he was not one of Brawley's attackers. The politically well-connected Pagonis sought to press his defamation claim in the state of Virginia, where Tawana and her family now live, because a highly irregular, politically tainted, and illegally produced report by then State Attorney General Robert Abrams branded Tawana a liar and her allegations a hoax. This is a case, as you know, I've said, I've been reporting on and following for 26 years, and to this date, Tawana's so-called hoax has not yet been tested in a trial, which is what she, her family, and her legal advisor, Mr. Maddox, have been insisting on. They want a trial. And all of these years, the state has gone through all kinds of permutations to prevent this case from coming to trial. By the way, I should mention that Harry Christ, the police officer implicated in the attack, reportedly was getting ready to talk. Within 18 hours of that being known, he was discovered in his home dead of a gunshot wound to the head. His death was ruled a suicide, although no note or weapon was found. And years later, a medical examiner went back and ruled it a homicide. So, added to the bizarre circumstances of this case is now an open case, an open homicide case, and it is possible that this particular aspect of the case, which does not have a statute of limitations, could begin the process of finally getting this case to court. The observation I wanted to make is, this case is 26 years old, and the country has been fed just voluminous amounts of information, not about the suspects, not about the circumstances of the official cover-up, the illegal, I mean, I've lost count of how many illegalities were committed, prosecutorial misconduct, police misconduct in this case. Rampant throughout this case. And every effort was made to suppress it. Making people believe that Tawana Brawley was running from a trial. Running from prosecution. She wasn't running. She insisted on being tried. Insisted on it. The state had a different idea. The state decided it did not need, because of the individuals involved, it did not need the embarrassment of having law enforcement officials, white men, break centuries of tradition of raping white black women and not being convicted of the crime. There's no recorded incident in the law books of a white male found guilty of raping a black woman. And so, as I explained with the Trayvon Martin case, the standard had to be maintained. The agency of the standard is really secondary. The standard had to be maintained. We have some time to take some calls at 888-874-4888. I'll be delighted to have you share your thoughts. 888-874-4888. What are you thinking? What's on your mind today? While I do that, let me remind you that we should keep in mind, you know, the whole thing, it's immaterial whether you agree or disagree. I'm not interested in whether you agree or disagree. I'm interested only that you think, and don't be so easily ensnared in a drama that is carefully choreographed by people with very questionable objectives. We still don't know who Ed Snowden works for. We still don't know who he is, what his agenda is. And yet, this is so odd. All he needs to do is to state something, and it becomes instantly credible. I haven't given anything to any other government. And people say, see, he hasn't given anything to any other government. And it just becomes fact. After all, he stated it. It must be true. And then we look again, too, at what it says about our society, you know, and what the business of being separate and unequal. There is no way that an African-American or a Latino man without a high school diploma would be able to have access to a job that pays $122,000 a year, that allows you to buy a home, allows you to acquire wealth, just because you are looked upon as a genius. You're a great genius. These are the benefits of belonging to the winning team in America. And that's what we talk, this is how white supremacy looks. All of these things are happening. The things that we should be questioning, we just say, oh no, we accept it. Hello, Michael from New Jersey. How are you?
Oh, hi, you trees. I just want to say briefly that if no one in the progressive community will support you and what your position is right now, I will support you. Because I think you're absolutely right. In really bringing to light the fact that this is not a case of the truth against the false. This is a case of the false against the false. Both sides of this are false in the sense that, you know, they're both wrong. Let's put it that way. It's not right against wrong. It's wrong against wrong. And I think you're right to make this point. I think that, you know, the power equation is, I really believe that power is evil, personally. And that I think that the good, if there is any good, it is in dismantling power. Because I believe power is evil. Now, people say there's good power. I don't believe there's any good power. I think you could do good without power. But I think power is evil. That dismantles it is doing some good. But in this case, you know, if you think that Snowden is a dismantler, he's just part of the equation of the conflict between wrong and wrong. There was a great philosopher that said that there can't be any conflict between truth and false. There's only conflict between the false and the false. And I think what you've done is here is revealed that there is really no division between Snowden and the things the NSA. They're part of one equation. It's just the yin and the yang of one thing. And the issue is that, you know, in a sense, you can compare it to Daniel Ellsberg, you know, who a lot of people think is like a folk hero at this point. But he didn't do anything different than Snowden. But he was also, you know, a product of that times. You know, he was working for Sperry, Rand Corporation, whatever. And it was kind of a similar thing. The only reason he got off from espionage was because his psychiatrist's office was broken into, and it was an abominable, you know, abuse of power with regard to his privacy. So it was again the wrong against the wrong. It's a false against the false. So I think, you know, that the environment conditions a person like Snowden, and he's a product of the same environment that he's attacking. And that's really what I wanted to say, and I support you 100% in your position, and I think you have a great show.
Well, thank you, Michael. That will make me sleep nicely over the weekend.
You have support for your position.
Thank you. Well, the thing is, really, I just want us to think and to really take an objective look at what is presented to us and stop for a moment and say, what is it that we're looking at? Ask some questions. And you would understand that, again, it is not about Snowden. It is about that industry that has created this machine. It is doing exactly the same thing as government is doing every single day and getting better and better and better at it. And again, it is a form of fascism, all the things that people would go and march against and denounce, what we don't like government control. They're doing that every single day. Well, I want to thank you for joining me today, and I hope it gave you an idea that just sit back a little. Don't get too enveloped in the whole business that because the finger is pointing at government, we feel good because, well, the government has been shown to be doing something really nasty. There goes the government again. And I'm saying, hey, you know, we've been here. Do you not understand that? You need to be asking questions of everybody. Nobody here is to be let off the leash. So thank you again for joining me, and rest up, and hopefully next week we have a nice invigorated crew and we can engage in vigorous discussion and debate. I really do thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company, and more so of your brain. Bye-bye.